ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिङ्ग् फ्रम् श्रीमद् भागवतम् केण्टु 11 चाप्टर् 9 टेक्स्ट् 16। एको नारायणो देवा पूर्वसृष्टं स्वमायया संहृत्या कालकलया कल्पान्तमिदमीश्वरः एक एवाद्वितीयोऽभूत् आत्माधारोऽखिलाश्रयः एको नारायणो देवः पूर्वसृष्टं स्वमायया संहृत्य कालकलया कल्पान्तमिदमीश्वरः एक एवाद्वितीयोऽभूत् आत्मधारोऽखिलाश्रयः एको नारायणो देवः पूर्वसृष्टं स्वमायया संहृत्य कालकलया कल्पान्तमिदमीश्वरः एक एवाद्वितीयोऽभूत् आत्माधारोऽखिलाश्रयः।
माताजी
एको नारायणो देवा पूर्वसृष्टं स्वमायया संहृत्यकालकलया कल्पान्तमिदमीश्वरः एक एवाद्वितीयोऽभूत् आत्मधारोऽखिलाश्रयः।
वर्ड टू वर्ड मीनिंग एकः अलोन नारायणः द सुप्रीम पर्सनालिटी ऑफ गॉडहेड देवः गॉड पूर्व प्रीवियसली सृष्टं क्रिएटेड Svamayaya, by his own potency, Samhritya,
withdrawing within himself. Kala, of time. Kalaya, by the portion. Kalpa ante, at the time of annihilation. Idam, this universe. Ishvaraha, the supreme controller. Ekaha, alone. Eva, indeed. Advitya, without a second. Abhut, became. Atmadharaha, one whose self is the reservoir and resting place of everything. Akhila, of all potencies. Ashraya, the reservoir. Translation. The Lord of the universe, Narayan, is worshipable God of all living entities. Without extraneous assistance, the Lord creates this universe by his own potency. And at the time of annihilation, the Lord destroys the universe through his personal expansion of time and withdraws all of the cosmos, including all the conditioned living entities within himself. Thus, his unlimited self is the shelter and reservoir of all potencies. The subtle pradhan, the basis of all cosmic manifestation, is conserved with the Lord and is in this way not different from him. In the aftermath of annihilation, the Lord stands alone. Purport by his disciples of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. As will be explained in verse 21 of this chapter, the Lord's independent creation and annihilation of the universe can be compared to the spider's creating and withdrawing his web. The word eka, or alone, is mentioned twice in this verse to emphasize that there is only one supreme personality of Godhead, and that all universal affairs as well as spiritual pastimes are conducted by his potency alone. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, this verse refers to Karano Varshai Vishnu, or Mahavishnu lying in the causal ocean. The words Atmadhara and Akhilashraya both indicate that Narayan is the reservoir or shelter of all existence. Atmadhara indicates that the Lord's personal body is the shelter of everything. Mahavishnu is a plenary portion of Lord Krishna, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whose body expand the innumerable potencies that manifest the material and spiritual worlds. According to the Brahma Samhita, these innumerable worlds rest within the Brahma Jyoti, or spiritual effulgence, also emanating from the Lord's body. Thus, Krishna is Ishvara, the Supreme Controller. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Dadameyam Dadati Swapadantikam Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Bracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyayvacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ramo Hare Ramo Rama Ramo Hare Hare. So before beginning, I would like to seek the blessings of all assembled Vaishnavas, especially His Grace Pankajangri Prabhu, so that I can speak something which is for my purification, and if there is something for everybody's inspiration. Hare Krishna. So, the chapter's name is Detachment from All That Is Material. We've seen that the Uddhav Gita, which is going on for the last few, maybe months, 2 months or so, and in the course of this discussion, the episode of King Yadu meeting this Brahmana and the discussion about the 24 gurus, how it has unfolded, and now it has led to the discussion of this philosophical verse. So today, from this verse, we derive the theme of how to see God in everything. And that will be the subject of our discussion over the next half an hour or so. So we were celebrating Narsingh Chaturdashi the last few days. And we see that how Hiranyakashipu, when Prahlad was preaching to his other demon brothers, so when they were being influenced by Prahlad, how Shand and Amarka became disturbed, and in spite of Hiranyakashipu trying all his might to remove Prahlad from his way, the Lord Krishna saved Prahlad in every circumstance. And then this time Shand and Amarka come running to Hiranyakashipu, telling him about how their teachings are not having any particular effect on Prahlad and what needs to be done so that they are not held responsible. Hiranyakashipu, like a snake who's possessed with his head rising and completely with anger, like it's being trampled, when a snake is angry, when it is trampled by someone, calls for Prahlad and says, "Prahlad, you impudent one, where has this impudence come unto you that you do not recognize that who is the supreme power and who is almighty and all powerful?" Prahlad, in spite of being chastised and threatened by Hiranyakashipu, was very much calm, composed, and he's folding his hands and answering Hiranyakashipu one by one. Hiranyakashipu then speaks the verse where he says, "Kvasau yadi sasarvatra kasmat sthambena drishyate." He says that, "O unintelligent one, Prahlad, where is that supreme lord or that supreme power that you have been talking for all this while and preaching to your brothers? And where is that supreme one who is more powerful than me?" That was the crux of Hiranyakashipu's entire problem. And then he goes on to say that if he is pervading throughout the universe and if he is the source of everything and present in everything, he says, "Kasmat sthambena drishyate," is he there in this pillar? Tell me, Prahlad. So then we pause the episode right here. And from today's verse, we see that the first line, it says, "Eko Deva Narayana." So we have this Narayan Upanishad composed by, it's a stotram composed by Atharva Rishi. So Atharva Rishi, when he gets the darshan of Lord Narayan, so he's overwhelmed and with gratitude, he sees Lord Narayan and he has a lot of realizations. So out of that, this Narayan Upanishad Stotram is composed, which we sometimes chant during the Maha Abhishek that we do for the Lord during various festivals. So in the composition of the Narayan Upanishad Stotram, it is delineated how Narayan or Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the source of everything. It says, Indrascha Narayana, Shakrascha Narayana, Shivascha Narayana, the 12 Rudras, the 8 Vasus, the Adityas, Shiva, Brahma, everybody originate from Narayan. And how Narayan is the source of everything and he is all pervading. But then a question arises, just as Hiranyakashipu asked a question to Prahlad. What did he say? He says, "Is that force or energy, or what you call your God, present inside this pillar? If yes, then tell him now to appear." So sometimes, of course, Hiranyakashipu was a very learned person, and Hiranyakashipu had complete knowledge about the supremacy and the power and the qualities of the Lord. But because of his abstinence or complete covering by his ego, that he says, "Madanyo, Jagadishwarah, where he says that besides me, who is the supreme controller of this universe? So this quality of Hiranyakashipu actually completely covered his vision, and he was blinded by his arrogance and rejected the presence of the Supreme Lord. So here we see that when Hiranyakashipu makes this statement or makes this claim to Prahlad, show me where is your Lord. That is, isn't that the question that we all are asking in today's modern age? That does God exist? That's the first day of our Gita course. And the Narayana Upanishad Stotram and everything very nicely proves that how Narayana or Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. But then how many of us had the faith and have the eyes to see God through the scriptures? So we'll briefly discuss upon this subject, upon what it takes to have faith. So Chaitanya Charan Prabhu makes a very nice statement, and he describes how can, there are 4 points in how a person is influenced for decisions he takes in life. Broadly, it's described into these 4 things. So the first thing that if you analyze, if you need to take a decision, more or less you'll be influenced by these 4 factors. So the first thing which he says is tradition. The second thing, culture. The third thing, mood. We are influenced by the decisions we take. Sometimes we feel I want to do it. Sometimes we feel I just don't feel like doing it. So mood is also another reason. And the fourth one, which is logic. So we'll just go through one by one. So the first thing which says tradition. Now what is tradition? Tradition is something which, you know, pushtiyon se chala aa raha hai. We've kind of been hearing from ages, from repeatedly over a period of time it falls through in our ears. We've been inculcated right from childhood. What we've learned from our parents, our grandparents, great grandparents. So something, some traditions, some customs which are prevalent existing in the society and which are passed around through parampara. So it's a very good thing to have and to follow, but sometimes that same thing might not be conclusive. Just for example, sati. Sati was a very traditional practice, but in today's modern age, you can't force anyone to have sati. That's the principle behind where it completely collapsed and where the tradition was actually lost. So this is one way where we can understand that how tradition is not entirely everything to repose your faith and take a decision. It is not that it is not sufficient, but it is by its own not an authority. The second point we will discuss, that is culture. Now culture is something, now tradition is something that we get through the past, and culture is something that we are influenced in the present. So if we want to analyze what is culture, then we might say in the 1930s, we take an example, that how in the 1930s there was this cigarette manufacturing company which wanted to promote its products. So during those times also people were smoking. And in America there was a survey conducted in its growth analysis, and then they actually found out that why were the sales being stagnated after a substantial period of time. And to their astonishment they found that right now our market is saturated. So it called for an urgent revamp of strategy. So this survey revealed that 50% of the population of America was influenced by the cigarettes. And they said, okay, the brighter side is the other remaining 50%. And they found out that women were not smoking in America, or it was a taboo at that time for women to not smoke. At the same time, a movement called as suffragette movement was engulfing the entire states. So this was something where a woman also fights for her power, or power especially to vote during elections. So this, what did they do? They actually got one of the topmost Hollywood actresses to endorse their product, and they revamped their product in a good packaging and a new tagline which said that it is especially for females. And then a host of other female celebrities were also tagged in. They were paid in huge sums of money, and during the Independence Day parade, they were, asked to smoke this cigarette brand. And then when this happened, this movement which was engulfing the state of America, and this together caught like wildfire. And then from there, the entire female population started to take this as fish takes to water. And the astonishing part about this is when someone asked one of the topmost celebrity who was endorsing, so what did she say? She just said that we are torching our light to freedom. So this became a mission statement, and it caught the imagination of the women of America. And then from there, degradation continued. So the astonishing part is no one ever questioned how does, I mean, torching your light to freedom bring and relate to independence and give you freedom, or how does drinking and smoking a cigarette give you freedom? But that is what maybe culture can be manipulated by unscrupulous people for their benefit. So culture also cannot be solely backed to take a decision in our life. And the third thing is mood. We see in mood also that how we are, I mean, a person who's having mood swings may never be given or be entrusted with responsibilities, because you'll never have faith on that person about how he'll react to certain things at certain situations, and will he be able to carry on these responsibilities. So this also in a kind of is not sufficient by its own self to take decisions. The fourth thing which we come to is logic. This is the most important thing of all the four. And Bhaktir Samrit Maharaj talks about this and elaborates further about this. He says that what is essentially believing in something by logic? That means you want proof. So proof is essential for what? To have faith, to repose faith. So that we believe in something, we take a decision in life. So when we see that seeing is believing, which is enhanced by this asking for proof for everything. I want proof. This is essential for me to believe what Vedas say, what scriptures say. So if seeing is believing is what the modern world latches upon, then how can we refute such statements? Just simply by giving comparisons or certain examples, very basic examples, like the human eye can see the sun from far off here, but just by that sight it looks like a small ball. But then actually with knowledge, through parampara, we actually know that what is sun? It is actually a personality. It is not just a small object. So vision itself can be impaired or it can be faulty. And there are examples, there are tons of examples on this subject, and you all know, I mean, and discuss much about it. So we won't go deep into this subject. Something like the electron also, the scientists have systematically hammered in our system. No one must have seen an electron or a proton in his entire life. But then this is something through the culture of repeated exposure at different times, the scientists have somehow managed to percolate our system and instill that faith and belief that they do exist. So there are various systems and various ways through which things can be established, but we need to also establish how to instill faith and take a decision to believe in scriptures, which is actually the ultimate authority in surrendering or knowing how God exists everywhere. So we will discuss on this in elaboration from now on. So it is said that the senses are defective and incomplete instrument for what? To give us. And the astonishing part is this defective and incomplete instrument is supposed to give us something which is complete and the absolute truth. So this is the irony of this particular statement. Jayadvait Maharaj, he says that man-made inventions are there, like the aeroplanes. So we somehow or the other are forced to repose our faith in, if we do not repose our faith in scriptures, then we will be forced to repose our faith in something or the other. So if we travel by an aeroplane, we are actually reposing our faith in the laws of the government and in the government reposing authority to that airline to have confidence that it will properly fly and take us from one destination to other. Even how can we understand from this example, he was quoting a very nice example to emphasize the point about how man-made technology and inventions fall substantially short in front of God's creation. Some years back, as we all remember, a volcano erupted in the United Kingdom, somewhere close to Greece. And what happened? As a consequence of that tiny volcano, one small consequence of Mother Nature, the entire system or the operations of the aviation industry took a hit, to such that people who were scheduled to fly to the anyway in the vicinity of the UK couldn't just take off from India, or it had to be cancelled or rerouted throughout the other side of the continent. So that means majority of the people preferred to cancel. So this is something where man, sophisticated with his intelligence, claims to have created gadgets for facility and enhancing and actually lording over material nature. But then time and again, God overpowers him just by a little spark of God's energy. He just demonstrates just one grass he will throw, and then we are completely brutalized and exposed. What could we do? They had to wait till the volcano subsided, till they could resume, and the skies cleared, till they could resume further operations. And it is further explained that when these four points do not help us to substantially come to a conclusive decision, so then the ultimate fifth authority is what? It is actually basing our faith in authorized scriptures, Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. So then how do we actually come to that level? How do we develop faith in scriptures? We all know scriptures, but then how does a common man who doesn't have faith that God exists, maybe, how will you kind of tell him and convince him that, hey, this is the scriptures and you have to logically accept it? So there are reasons which are given. You say, okay, you do not accept in God, you do not believe in God, at least you will be forced to subdue under the forces of nature. And then taking this as base, something which is exhibiting predictions about the future, there are statements in the Bhagavatam in the third canto which predict how the and details, intricate minute details are given about the actual growth of the hands and limbs of the fetus of the child within the womb, to such an extent that in this week, what will this happen in the next month, how will it grow, how will it react. So all this is given in the Bhagavatam. And then there are more points to substantiate where future predictions about something like Chanakya's shlokas and the dynasties which are going to come in future are all accurately and have been accurately predicted by the Bhagavatam, which has been compiled thousands of years ago. And science and technology is slowly, slowly catching up now, and they claim with their inventions that, okay, now we believe. Just like the other day we received a video which said that now scientists are claiming that Sanskrit is a bona fide language. Why? Because they found out finally through their analysis that by actually reciting the shlokas of Sanskrit from childhood, what happens? They found out that a part of the brain actually expands. And when the part of the brain expands, what happens? Supposedly the intelligent levels of the humans grow. So now they are claiming that Sanskrit, and they are putting their seal, Sanskrit is a bona fide authorized language for us to follow. So if we do not repose our faith in scriptures, then at certain point others will claim and we'll have to surrender to their authority. Then mathematics and chemistry is also one example how they are really superior to the contemporary things. And if that is not sufficient, if we somehow have an opportunity to visit ancient monuments, constructions and temples in South India, we'll actually see how intricately every stone is carved. Or sometimes it's mind-boggling how one stone is attached to the other stone without any cement or any binding substance. So it's unfathomable in that age where there were no cranes, how huge boulders and these stones would have been transported to such a height. So these are some things that we need to infer from our logic, and if we do not have that, then actually we have to simply repose our faith to them. And we can actually tell those people who do not have faith that even though you do not have faith, at least by understanding or knowing these things now, do you really actually develop a little bit of confidence that, hey, if all these things have happened and there is something which mentions about these things thousands of years ago, which speaks about these things and occurrences many, many years ago, then at least give them a chance that they are speaking something correct and logical. So if that is the case, then apply the knowledge, understand the philosophy, understand the knowledge, and then if something works for you from the scriptures, what will happen? Shraddha develops, a little bit of faith develops. And then as Prabhupada and Maharaj say, faith is a substance which gives us the eyes to see God. So basically, the prerequisite for practicing bhakti or understanding and trying to see Krishna everywhere is faith. So this is how we can actually kind of prove or at least try to convince someone to repose their faith and take a decision to understand and actually have faith in scriptures. Because through the points we understood that how tradition, culture, logic and as well as mood, these four things are not absolute, although they are definitely very needful in taking decisions, but they themselves in their individual entity are not sufficient enough to repose authority for us to take a decision. So therefore the fifth cause comes, that is authorized scriptures and belief, and this we just studied how we repose our faith on the authorized scriptures. So now we come to the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna, he asks Krishna that, please Krishna, tell me, how do I see you in everything? How do I perceive you in nature, in the different objects, that you are all pervading? So Arjuna asks Krishna, katham vidyamaham yogins, tvam sada parichintayan, keshu keshu cha bhaveshu, chintyosi bhagavan maya. So Arjuna here is telling that Krishna, you are the supreme mystic and you are pervading throughout the entire universe. Please tell me how you pervade and permeate this entire universe, and even in every object, not only an animate, even an inanimate object, you are present in that. Please give us the vision and the eyes to see you there. So this Prabhupada explains in the purport that Arjuna was a self-realized soul. He didn't need to ask any questions to Krishna to see. He was a pure devotee of the Lord. But Prabhupada says, Arjuna asked that question because he knew that the common men in future would not be able to see God in the three forms of Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan, which Bhagavatam explains are the three faces of the absolute realized truth. So when we don't have faith in scriptures, how do we have faith that you can have Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan? So then, when man, whose consciousness is at a lower level, if you cannot feel the presence of Lord in the initial stage in Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan, then Arjuna, through the Bhagavad Gita, is very merciful on us to ask Krishna these questions, and Krishna gives the answers as to how he is present in the vibhutis throughout the entire creation. There are some vibhutis which Krishna mentions which are very nice to study. Like Krishna says, I am of the immovable sthavaranam Himalaya. So now what is Himalaya, if one can imagine, what is the glory of Himalaya? What is so special that Lord states in Bhagavad Gita that of the immovable I am the Himalayas? So just from our material intelligence to analyze the Himalayas, we could say that what is Himalayas? Himalaya starts from Kashmir, it goes right up to Assam. 4,000 kilometers in length, 400 kilometers in width. On one side is India with a complete different culture and heritage and traditions. On the other side, if you manage to cross, you land up in China. So this is what just a pure simple mountain kind of demonstrates. That is one of the powers of Himalayas. More than that, you could say there are many mountains in the universes. Why the Lord states that I am of the immovable Himalayas? The Lord doesn't have any, he has a lot of examples to choose from, but why specifically Himalayas? He could have said, I am the Mandar mountain, which is being churned by the demons and the demigods. But we have to understand that we cannot relate with Mandar mountains. We have We struggle in our faith to believe what God has written in the scriptures. So something that we can see when we go to the Gangotri and the Himalayas and when we go to Badrinath and the northern direction, it just takes you to go there and stand alone in that particular area. You go in a valley, you are surrounded on all four sides by mountains. That feeling itself will definitely, any sane, intelligent man will actually realize this is something divine and this is something supernatural to what is existing in this world. And Krishna says, know me, O Arjuna, to be a spark of this splendor. That means such a big and huge creation. Krishna says this is nothing but just a spark of my splendor or my creation. Further, one more example we take is Ashvattha Sarva Vrikshanam. So what is an Ashvattha tree or a people or banyan tree as it is mentioned in the scriptures? What is the beauty and the speciality about this Ashvattha or banyan tree to say as? So when we actually look at the Ashvattha tree, it's like a very ancient tradition tree which is supposed to grow and its lifespan is more than easily 1,000 years. When we actually observe an Ashvattha tree, the seed or the actual original branch and the root, you will never come to know after a few years, because more trees grow besides the Ashvattha tree and they intertwine, and actually the roots go such deep that kilometers it is spread within the ground. So no one can actually find out which is the original root or the branch or the of the Ashvattha tree, when it actually originated from. And Krishna says in the Gita Bhushan, that Krishna says that it is the representative of Lord Vishnu. That is what the Ashvattha tree represents. Also, I have heard from some devotees saying that when Krishna used to cross the Yamuna, he used the Ashvattha tree. It was so huge and so spread far out, that when he was crossing the Yamuna, just by merely taking help of the branches of the Ashvattha tree, he could cross the Yamuna. So this is something that I have heard of, not read anywhere. And Radhanath Maharaj gives an example to further substantiate this point of seeing God everywhere. So he says, one time Srila Prabhupada was asked a question. Srila Prabhupada actually asked a question to one of his disciples. So what do you see there on the table? So the disciple says, Prabhupada, these are your spectacles. So then Prabhupada says, so? So then Prabhupada says, what do you see? So the disciple says, Prabhupada, I remember you. When I see these spectacles, this spectacles reminds me of Srila Prabhupada. I feel lot of love and gratitude as soon as I see these spectacles. Prabhupada may not be in front of him, but that mere sight of spectacles is enough to arouse a sense of feeling, gratitude, lot of love and emotions within the heart. So what is this? So Maharaj beautifully explains that this particular example is something which is compared to seeing Krishna even in matter. So as we study the Bhagavad Gita, Devarshircha Naradam, Krishna also gives another example. He gives lot of vibhutis, but he says, O Arjuna, there are innumerable and infinite vibhutis to speak as, but it will be impossible for anyone to comprehend and understand. So I will just speak a few vibhutis. Narad Muni, what is the speciality of Narad Muni? If we analyze Narad Muni, he is responsible for the writing of the Bhagavatam. How? When Vyasadeva was despondent, in the fifth chapter of the first canto, Narad Muni appears there and he gives solace to Vyasadeva. So there he is responsible for the creation of the Bhagavatam. Narad Muni is also responsible for Ramayana. How? Similarly, when Valmiki was despondent because the curse basically came out in the form of a shloka, shoka in the form of shloka. Basically, when he saw the Krauncha birds being killed, Valmiki Muni went into depression. And that time, no one could convince him until Narad Muni comes and gives him solace again. So again, Narad Muni is responsible for our epic Ramayana also. What is Narad Muni again renowned and famous for? Winning over the trust of demons and also devatas. So it's very difficult for someone to actually relate to two conflicting opinions and authorities. if there are two authorities who have diverse opinions and diverse natures on any particular single subject, if you ask, he'll say this is the sun, he'll say this is the moon. But to actually have a coherence and have a good relationship where you can actually repose and win the trust and faith of both authorities, that is what Narad Muni also shows us through scriptural examples. What about the devatas? The example is of Kayadu, when Hiranyakashipu is going for the penance. So the devatas abduct Kayadu. That time Narad Muni appears. He says, wait, do not do anything. This progeny will be responsible for the deliverance of Hiranyakashipu and also your sustenance from all your miseries. So do not harm this child. And then Narad Muni does womb preaching to Prahlad Maharaj. And then we say, this is the way he wins the trust and faith of devatas. What about the demons? Kamsa, when he says, I'll kill the eighth child, that time he is instructed that Krishna might appear first also. And when he decides that, Narad Muni very expertly comes at that situation and convinces Kamsa that, oh Kamsa, you cannot take any chance. The cause for your annihilation may take birth any time. So then even Narad Muni reposes and wins the faith of demons like Kamsa. So these are few examples how Krishna says that of the saintly rishis, I am Narad Muni. So we might ask, why all these personalities? So it's very interesting to when we actually break them and analyze. So there are many more examples to one time Govind Prabhu was just mentioning that how when he took a school kids to a excursion, there was a coconut tree and then a farmer just happened to come there. And what did he do? He climbed up the tree within 30 seconds. And then he climbed down the tree within the next 15 seconds. What did he do once he came down? He actually offered obeisances to the tree. And then Govind Prabhu was very intrigued by this entire spectacle. And then he said, why did you offer obeisances? Ye jhaad ko aapne kyu dandavat diya? So then the farmer spontaneously said that ye to kalpa vriksh hai na, ye isme bhi paramatma hai, to ispe maine pair lagaya hai, to abhi main maafi mang raha hun. So this is how a simple person can see God even in a tree. Because he was a farmer, he could relate that this coconut tree is a kalpa vriksh. It's very simple, but we need to have the faith to have the eyes to see God. So there is a very beautiful story which is actually a folk tale which describes about how to have faith that Krishna is present even in matter, what to speak of living entities. So one time Krishna was running around in Vrindavan and Mother Yashoda was trying to catch Krishna because he was committing a lot of mischief. So then Krishna just pulls the hand of Mother Yashoda and runs into the courtyard. He jumps the wall of the courtyard. Mother Yashoda couldn't jump. So she decides to come from the other way. And in the meantime, Krishna is running into the fields far off away from Mother Yashoda. And he comes to a place where there is an old man after selling his butter, curd and dahi and chas. He is now resting there with his empty pots. So Krishna comes running to this old man and he says, oh old man, please help me. My mother Yashoda is running after me. She is like Durga personified, completely coming with a stick in her hand to hit me because I have committed a lot of mischief. Please save me from my mother. So the old man says, well, this is an open field and I don't have anything to hide you. What do I do? So Krishna tells him, look, there is a big pot which is completely vacant and empty. I will go inside this pot and I will hide. What you do is you cover this pot with the lid and you sit over this pot. And sure enough, when Mother Yashoda will come in a few minutes, she will come to you definitely and ask, where am I? So that time you very coolly just shrug your shoulders and say, who Krishna? Is he so famous that everyone knows him? And how does he tell her to describe my looks. So then he does the same thing when Mother Yashoda comes. He actually repeats the same thing. And Mother Yashoda, when she begins to describe the beauty and glory of Krishna, actually she completely, the anger of Mother Yashoda vanishes. It is said that Krishna is in Shuddha Sattva and the anger is in Rajoguna. So basically Shuddha Sattva completely negates Rajoguna. So similarly Mother Yashoda threw the stick away and then the old man didn't open his mouth. So he was saved from speaking falsity. Mother Yashoda decided to move on because her anger had vanished. So now the old man was sitting on the pot and from beneath there is a lot of pressure. And Krishna says, take me out of here. Enough. Mother Yashoda has gone long away. Why are you still keeping me in this pot? So then the old man says, now how after coming to know who you are and I mean from Mother Yashoda's description I realize what your potency is and what your glory is. Now am I a fool that I'll let you go like that so cheaply? So the old man says, on one condition I'll let you go, that you give me Krishna Prem or you give me spiritual realization. So Krishna says, okay, granted, take it, but you take me out from here. So then the old man says, he becomes a little more magnanimous. He says, I remember my family at this time. How can I alone go back to the spiritual world? Please grant me this boon that along with me, my entire family also gets spiritual realization or love of God. So Krishna says, my mother was just giving me, I was fearful of my mother. But now here, because of your delay, I am getting suffocated. You are suffocating me, old man. Take me out of here. Krishna says, okay, granted. Then the old man further becomes more magnanimous. The old man says, what about my village? My family and myself, just we getting liberated. But when I go to my village, I will see that all my villagers will do kind of shame on me, fee on me. That what kind of an individuality or devotee are you? That you are not thinking of others at the time when you get an opportunity. So he says, please, along with my family, please give the benediction that even all the villagers in my village will receive your shelter. So Krishna says, okay, granted, but now take me out of this pot. So the old man, he now says, do you think that I am the reason for your bondage? Whom do you think is the reason for your liberation? So Krishna says, you, who else? So he says, no. So then he again questions Krishna. Who do you think is the cause of liberation for me? So now Krishna smiles and he says, I understand. So this pot is the reason for me getting liberated. And this pot is the reason for you getting liberated. So now the old man catches Krishna and says, please liberate this pot, then only I will let you go from here. So Krishna says, I had heard that when one gets old, one becomes a little bit, you know, finicky or childlike. But by all your reasons you are appearing, now I am seeing that how old men become childlike. So then the old man, he says, please Krishna, you liberate this pot. Krishna says, how do I liberate this pot? This is an inanimate object. So the old man says, what is inanimate? Even matter, the old man tells Krishna, that matter which comes in touch with you, Krishna, it becomes full of life. And anything which is full of life, it is devoid of Krishna, it doesn't matter, basically. In one sense, matter becomes spirit when it is Krishnaized. And spirit also is matter when it is devoid of Krishna. That is the understanding. So now, another example is given to emphasize this point is Hanumanji and the Bhima episode, where Bhima refuses to cross the tail of Hanumanji, acknowledging the presence of Paramatma within Hanuman. And then Krishna is very happy with the old man and he gives, happily states, O old man, I am very happy with you. And whenever your time comes for you to leave this world, whenever you come to my abode, you will see that pot will be near me and all the butter that is being churned in the spiritual world will be in that pot, will keep refilling that pot again and again, and it will be in my service eternally. So then the old man, this is how, it's a very nice example to actually emphasize the point of how Lord is pervading not only spirit but also matter. So now we move on to the final stage where we see how pure devotees actually manage to see Krishna in everything. So in the Bhagavatam we see that Parikshit Maharaj, what happened to Parikshit Maharaj? He got a curse. So Parikshit Maharaj, In that curse, he saw Krishna. What was the result? Srimad Bhagavatam, 7 days, 7 nights, Parikshit Maharaj absorbed. The result is Srimad Bhagavatam. Queen Kunti, she prays to Krishna that, oh Krishna, let me remember, let obstacles befall upon me so that I never forget your lotus feet. And in misery, Queen Kunti chooses to see Krishna. One more example is Maharaj Chitraketu in the Bhagavatam, where Parvati curses Chitraketu, but then he doesn't get demoralized or demotivated. He chooses to see Krishna in that, and as Vritrasur, Chitraketu Maharaj actually perfects his life by living the life of Vritrasur. So these are examples from the life of pure devotees, how they have seen the hand of God, seen Krishna's presence in the most dire circumstances where one may actually give up seemingly faith in God and practicing, what to speak of continuing to practice this process. And it's so ironical to say that Yashoda Maiya in the Mrida Bhrakshan Leela, when she was actually, you know, after that she was actually giving Krishna a bath. Why? To clean the body of Krishna. So it is ironical when we actually analyze this statement and we say Yashoda Maiya gives Abhishek to Krishna daily to clean all the impurities that is on his body. But what do we entities, our hope is to actually take just Krishna's holy name, and that holy name actually purifies our existence and substance. That's the hope for us to connect and see God everywhere. So the irony is that Supreme Lord, whose energy in the form of one holy name, which can purify the entire universe and existence, is cleansed by Yashoda to remove dirt from his body. So these are some beautiful things where we can actually see how to see Krishna everywhere. And finally, I'll conclude with this one point where Lord Narsingdev also, there is, when Lord Narsingdev kills Hiranyakashipu, the devatas appear there, the chanaras appear there, the pitris appear there, everybody appear. And one by one they are analyzing and seeing the situation, and their heart and their mind is poured. So one Sri Vaishnav Acharya commentates on this and he says, first the devatas come. Indra, he says that seeing this Hiranyakashipu, I am so terrified, I was so terrified for all this while, that the place where the Supreme Lord Vishnu resides, he was actually missing from my heart for so long, and that position was taken by Hiranyakashipu because of fear. Then the Pitris come. And the Pitris say that we had actually ceased to receive oblations from our generations, and because of that, everywhere we were disturbed and seeing Hiranyakashipu everywhere and stopped focusing on Krishna. And finally, the Vaikunth Vasis come there. And then they glorify Narasimha Dev and they say that how even in that killing of Hiranyakashipu, they visualize and they perceive to see Hiranyakashipu even in that state as an eternal consort and associate of Lord Krishna and Narasimha Dev. So, Prabhupada in the commentary or purports, he mentions that Hiranyakashipu had actually made a magnanimous or magnificent throne where he used to sit, drink blood and eat flesh all throughout his life and commit all kinds of atrocities. And what did Lord Narasimhadev do when he actually killed Hiranyakashipu? He went and sat on that same throne. To some it might seem that how did Lord Narasimhadev accept that object or that throne, because there was so much of sin attached to that throne and so much of sinful activity committed from that particular object. But then Lord Narasimhadev says that after all, this Hiranyakashipu is my consort and my associate, and I accept devotional service from him in this way. So the Acharya says that even though Hiranyakashipu never did any direct service towards Narasimhadev, but the magnanimity of the Lord is, he is seeing and taking that indirect service also from Hiranyakashipu in the form of the object. So that is how Acharyas have given examples, and we see that how to see God in everything and everywhere. And then when we get this knowledge from Krishna through the Bhagavad Gita, through the Bhagavatam, what we need to do next is, we need to practice this, apply in our life. How do we understand even after this? We need to associate with devotees. We need to keep chanting the holy names. We need to come to the temple. And temple is a place where you will get knowledge about how to see God in everything. And here you come, you take knowledge about how to see God in everything. And you go in the outside world and apply that knowledge. See Krishna in everything, in everywhere. Practice it and develop bhakti and strive to develop love of God. That is, in essence, the goal of human life. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.